live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by conservative Fran Eaton, liberal David Serta, and columnist Mary Mitchell of the Chicago Sun-Times. Our program coming to you from our new home at the XM Sirius Studios on Chicago's Great West Side, where our toll-free lines are now open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you watched Meet the Press today, former Secretary of State James Baker under President Bush I and Bill Daley, Secretary of Commerce under Bill Clinton, they were on. They were talking about the economic crisis in the country and the challenges to the new president-elect. And one of the ideas that James Baker put on the table that Bill Daley sort of danced around was the question, should President Bush and Barack Obama meet to send a signal of solidarity to the financial world? It obviously has been up and down. Everything is going a different way every day. And so it was James Baker, who was also the former Treasury Secretary in the Bush administration. He was saying, let's just get them together and maybe collectively they can send an important signal to the financial markets. David Serta is our liberal. David, nice to have you with us. It's been a while since you've been on the show. What's your reaction to that idea from Secretary Baker?
I think we have one president at a time, and I didn't know what that that meeting would mean to people. I don't know what signal they would get out of it, because the Obama administration is coming together and they're waiting to take over. And right now, the responsibility of running the government and economic policy is with President Bush. I think that right now, President-elect Obama is doing things positively with this program of 2.5 million jobs, the Jobs Work Program together. And he's, and with these other things, he is sending a signal to the markets that I think will be clearer than anything he could do together with President Bush.
Are they reacting positively? Fran Eaton, our conservative tonight.
Well, Friday, evidently, there's something good that happened, probably the idea of who he's going to select to be the next Secretary of Treasury. But on, I am in agreement. I think there is going to be definitely a shift from one administration to the other. It's going to be one particular perspective on from free market to government rescue. Although I'm disappointed.
There has to be some neutral things that really, you know, are not going to compromise either man, that maybe in this interim, and we're talking about almost 2 months before, you know, the power shift takes place, still no, you're not buying it. Mary Mitchell of the Sun-Times.
Bizarre.
Is there bizarre?
I think it would be bizarre for an outgoing president and a president-elect to come together to try to calm down the markets. The reason for that is the President-elect has presented his plan. He's talked about it for nearly 2 years, what he would do if he were elected. Now he's elected, and he's beginning to put together a team of people to put in place what he said that he would do.
Are the markets responding, though, to that?
Kind of slow
to respond to that.
But what can you do about that? I mean, if they didn't respond to Bush, I mean, remember, it was under the Bush administration that we got in all this
well,
mess.
Well, I think what James Baker was saying is that, you know, with all of this, you know, hope and opportunity and everything else that Obama has been talking about, you know, thus far it's not happening, and it is almost 2 months.
It can't happen until he takes office. He has to at least be in the position one president at a time. But not only that, it's almost as if we expect that the public should run up to the White House and just pack up George Bush things and get him out of the way and start the administration before January 20th.
I don't think that's what he was talking about, Dave.
Well, he's talking about a meeting with President Bush and President-elect Obama and sending some kind of signal. And Mr. Baker was kind of vague on what the signal is. But what would it mean? I think that what is happening now is President-elect Obama is putting together a team and announcing plans and legislation that he wants to get through, and that
will be announced tomorrow in Chicago.
And that is positive. That is going to positively impact the markets, but there are things going, you know, I don't understand what he could do along with President Bush because he doesn't have the power to enact the President-elect Obama does not now.
And they
the
already
next
missed.
60 days have the there's power to do it.
Everybody's poo-pooing
the
symbolism.
But we've seen the symbolism. We had a story, a week ago with Barack Obama coming and the family coming to the White House and meeting with George Bush, and you had them sitting in the Oval Office, and they were very cordial, and they were talking about the economic crisis and talking about the change of the administration. We've seen it. The picture was in the New York Times. If that didn't calm folks down, then I don't know what coming together again was supposed to do.
I think we're missing the point, but we're going to see what we have for the next 4 years, which is us looking to a particular White House or a particular Congress to solve all of our problems, and that is not going to be the answer. Ultimately, you know, they can calm the temper, the panic that's going on, but honestly, it is not Barack Obama or any of his appointments that will ultimately get us out of this. It has to be us as Americans determining we're going to save more instead of spend more. We're not going to buy houses we can't afford. We have to take personal responsibility for some of this, and it will take as long to get out of it, maybe, as long as it's taking to get into it. And that a quick fix is not going to happen on January 20th.
I want to talk about some of the other things that can be done, but notwithstanding what you just said, there are many people, including the president-elect, who feels that there is a government responsibility here or a role to play. And yesterday, in his Radio Now radio/internet address, President-elect Obama said, "I have already directed my economic team to come up with an economic recovery plan that will mean 2.5 million more jobs by January of 2011. It will be a two-year nationwide effort to jumpstart job creation in America and lay the foundation for a strong and growing economy. We'll put people back to work rebuilding our crumbling roads and bridges, modernizing schools that are failing our children, and building alternative energy technologies." End of quote. President-elect Barack Obama. It could have been FDR, David.
It could have been, and this is something that needed to be done and something that will get more support cross party lines because of the economic crisis that we're in. There's a recognition that we need to do this. And I think one of the unique things about this program is he's announced it. He's going to get the legislation written. He's going to have it sent out to the incoming Congress so it's ready to go and be enacted shortly after he takes office.
So this is the first 100 days. This is the signal on what the first 100 days is going to be about.
This is one piece of it.
Plus whatever executive orders he comes
out. I think that he's going to have a stack of executive orders reversing some of the Bush administration, President Bush's orders. But this is one piece of legislation, and he's going to get it out of the box. He's going to get out of the box running. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's going to – and that kind of decisive leadership is going to impact the market.
It's been also hinted that he may hold off on his decision to repeal the Bush tax cuts for those upper incomes. They may push that back to 2011 as well. I want to talk about that when we continue, and also whether or not all of the focus on the economy, is it going to buy him some time in delivering on the promise about ending the war in Iraq? 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont from Chicago.
Healthy lips should never go naked. So what are you going to wear? How about ChapStick 100% Naturals? It's the all-natural way to keep lips feeling healthy. And it slides on so comfortably smooth. Or why not try on new ChapStick True Shimmer? It's the only ChapStick with shimmering highlights to give lips a beautiful, radiant shine every time you put it on. So if you want lips to look and feel healthy, never let your lips go naked. Always wear ChapStick.
Hey, you want to hear some holiday joy? This season, when you buy an Xbox 360 or an Xbox 360 Elite, you get two bonus games included. DreamWorks Kung Fu Panda and Lego Indiana Jones The Original Adventures, rated everyone 10 and up. The Xbox 360 and Xbox 360 Elite have a hard drive with massive storage, super smooth textures, surround sound capability, wireless controller, headset, the works, and two bonus games included. While supplies last, inside marked packages. Xbox 360, more games, more choice, more fun. Xbox 360, jump in!
From Sacramento, California to Austin, Texas, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Fran Eaton, our conservative, she was chomping at the bit to react to some things that David had to say.
Well, I was just going to point out, is the transition. Bush has disappointed a lot of conservatives by his tendency to lean towards government intervention a lot. And so the pure free market idea is to let us, you know, let it work itself through, step in cases of emergency. But, you know, to say that it's already been started, the transition has been started with towards what Obama may do, it may be a little bit less blurred than we'd like it to be, more blurred than we'd like it to be, as far as the difference in the way that he has handled and gotten us into more debt and the larger budget. That is what we have paid the price for. And it was anti-conservative and anti-Republican the way that it finally ended up being. So I just wanted to leave that on the table, too, because honestly, I think the people of America are putting way too much pressure on Barack Obama to save us out of all of this because he won't be able to.
I want to talk about some of the things, Mary. I'll start with you. I want to talk about some of the things that Fran mentioned in the last segment, about the things that the average person can do to try to get through this crisis. What can they do?
Well, the average person, I mean, we keep hearing save more money, be more responsible. I've even heard, like, turn off your lights, you know, conserve energy. Don't let don't leave the water running when you brush your teeth, things like that. All that's well and good. But we know that this financial crisis really started with the banking industry and the mortgage industry being negligent and being almost criminally negligent in terms of how they loaned money. And that is
to people who shouldn't have been in a home.
It's not even so much. I think that was part of it, the people who shouldn't have been in the home. But it wasn't just people who shouldn't have been in the home. There were people who were investing for the first time in homes. Everybody sold the dream that, you know, we can all be homeowners and housing seemed to be the place you need to put your money. And they were flipping houses left and right. So it wasn't just people that, you know, the mom and dad who bought the house that they couldn't afford. It was people who was using houses as an investment. And that is how we got ourselves in that trouble.
David.
This is going back to what Fran said. I think the problem was that there was too little government, that is too little regulation over the mortgage industry and over the finance industry. And that's what got us into this problem. And no less than Alan Greenspan has said, I was wrong. I was wrong that the free markets could govern themselves, that we actually needed more regulation. So the Republican idea of free markets and less regulation was wrong and
it didn't work.
I would like you to take responsibility and
understand that there were groups that were pressuring banking institutions to loan to people who were not qualified. There was a responsibility on that side of it as well. Take those types together. I can't say that there was one side.
The idea that, you know, folks were loaning poor people or folks who had marginal credit money to buy houses, and this is how we got in this mess, that to me is overblown. It was a lot of fraud involved, a lot of greed involved. People made a lot of money off of those loans.
So we should also mention
fraud
as well.
One of the other things is that the credit cards, I mean, I get five or six solicitations a week from credit cards. So the fact that the credit cards but I think credit cards are being sent to people that don't have good credit as well. And that necessarily isn't that's an industry-wide solicitation of trying to get more people hooked on overspending.
Here's the thing that people that I talk to tell me, at the same time that we changed the bankruptcy laws in this country to hold people responsible for the debts they incur, now we're talking about bailing out people who made some poor decisions that affected the entire nation. We don't have a problem with that. I don't think that the little guy, the hardworking guy who maybe they did have marginal credit problems, or the population of people who are redlined and their communities have been redlined for decades, the fact that they got into the housing market is not what caused this problem. Greed caused this problem.
And on both parts, see. And I still believe that we can't. If we want something, we buy it. I mean, there is a generation of that. I happen to be the child of one who lived through the Depression, and we were taught not to spend more than you can. to borrow on equity that doesn't exist in a house. I mean, there's responsibilities of the owners, of the buyers, and of the sellers. And I say to get, and I think the greed is not just on behalf of the institutions; it's beyond those that we're benefiting from it
talking,
as well.
You're talking about a philosophy that government frequently has rewarded irresponsibility. Personal irresponsibility.
Well, and I think it was in a desire to try to get everyone to move into another level. But this of housing rights, housing entitlements, all of those things, we have to work for that. I mean, it is not a gift to us. We have
to work
for it. Well,
I don't think that – I really don't want to leave it that people are who got into the houses that somehow they didn't deserve them or they didn't work for them or they weren't entitled. Some of the people, especially the people that write to me and call me, some of those people didn't even have a clue.
They were misled.
They were misled. Mm-hmm. And so you saw a lot of that. You saw so much of that states
– misled by who?
By the lenders. Mm-hmm. Okay, they go in.
Is it a matter of just misleading, or I mean, frankly, is the devil in the small print? Is it something that they didn't read? I mean, you're an attorney; you're paid big bucks because people sometimes don't read contracts, right? Although you're more of a different civil rights and defense attorney, but the reality is,
no, the
buyer beware, right?
Well, people preyed upon people's ignorance, and they didn't understand what they were getting into, and they were buying houses that they couldn't afford, and that's a large part of this problem. And then they bundle those mortgages into derivatives, and banks are losing billions of dollars on this. And that's where regulation could have stopped this problem from exploding.
I want to switch gears just for a second. One of the other things that obviously has dominated news in the last several weeks is the role of the automakers. They want a huge bailout. They certainly did not help themselves when the big three went to Washington last week. The people in your circles, what are they saying about bailing out the automobile industry?
Well, this is a very difficult problem because the auto industry has already been given $25 billion to build greener cars. Now they're asking for another $25 billion. And someone, now leaders have asked the basic question, well, what would you do with this and how it's going to help you? Because it seems like it might be throwing good money after bad, and that what might happen is that one of the large automakers may go bankrupt. And then they'll have to restructure and become more competitive. You know, other industries automakers have, in this environment, been competitive and made money.
I want to hear from our free marketer. Do you agree that one, two, or three of them have got to go down before and retool?
I'm not saying that they have to go down.
No, I want to get from friends.
It is a very difficult situation, but there again, it didn't happen overnight. So you have unions and pensions, and when the big three are being paid, they're paying $70. It costs $70 an hour to make a car that other countries can do for $25 an hour. It puts us at a disadvantage, and that is a difficult thing. I have family members that are going to suffer if this goes under. They are on pensions and counting on that. But on the other hand, I mean, do we only rescue the ones that are our friends? I mean, when we come to – when they're all going to be coming here sooner or later. Somebody's going to kind of have to say, okay, I have to deal with this. I got us in this. We cannot ask the government to solve every one of these things.
So you say let them go. I want to be clear. You say let them go.
I honestly think that is the answer. But, I am a free marketer, and I do believe that there needs to be an accountability. And if it was a drug company, if it was any one of these major companies, how much can we do?
Where do we draw the line, Mary?
Our backs are against the wall here, because if the auto industry goes down, we talk about the big three going down, and maybe I agree with you. You make lousy cars, you're not competitive, you should go down. But the bottom line is we're talking about other industries, not just the auto industry. Now we're talking about the suppliers, and we're talking about tire makers, and we're talking about—
Well, let them go bankrupt. Let them reorganize.
Okay, so then we have—
And that's one option, which is more of a forced— It's more of a forced response than— I mean, we had Sam Skinner, former Secretary of Transportation, here last week in that chair, who was basically saying, it isn't going to be just 25 million. You talked about 25. It's going to be— – they're going to be coming every month.
That's what I was getting at, that what is $25 million going to buy you? It's just going to buy you some time for the inevitable collapse. If that is the case, then we have to, think about how we could deal with this after the bankruptcy, because that would allow them to renegotiate contracts. And I don't put this, I don't think you can put this all on the union. I mean, look at the leadership. They were not building the cars that people want to buy.
Again.
And that wasn't the union doing that. That was leadership.
Everybody.
Doing that.
This is everybody. Exactly. Everybody has screwed up big time in this particular
case.
It's
a pendulum swing of sorts. I don't know if you want to call it a cycle or whatever, but in the early 80s, we've lived through the same type of thing in the trucking industry. There was a whole lot of companies that shut down. People suffered through that. Again, this is a cycle. We ride this as high as we can, but there is an accountability in time.
I tend to agree with you on that point. Except I think that we're in a very difficult spot right now. And so the auto industry going down, along with the whole problems with the banking industry, I just think there's just too much at one time. And therefore, that's why I would think that it makes sense to bail them out.
Well, where does the money come from, ultimately, to bail them out? This is the question. It's going to be our children, our grandchildren, and so on, that pay the pay for our misfortune or bad judgment.
It would be a loan that would be repaid, and they would have first priority. Well, that's the plan.
Hopefully,
but
it would be
a have
plan.
To have.
Did anybody see Saturday Night Live last? The opening of Saturday Night Live. It was the three automakers testifying last week. It was one of the funniest opening bits on Saturday Night Live in a long time. 1-800-723-8020. And how do you feel about the bailout? How do you feel about the idea of maybe Bush and Obama getting together and sending a signal to the financial world? 1-800-723-8029. Your calls when we come back from Chicago.
I'm here to tell you that Geico.com is easy to use. I bet you already knew that. A website that's convenient and fast. Well, really, had no idea. Of course it's fast and easy. Now, allow me to go off script and tell you why Geico.com is so great. First, you can get a free rate quote right then and there. You can update your policy, make a payment, even report and track a claim. There's the news. There's the big aha. Sorry, just had to get it off my chest.
For a free rate quote, visit Geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
This holiday season, live your moment with friends, family, and the Xbox 360 Arcade. Now you can enjoy the Xbox 360 Arcade right out of the box with 6 super cool games included. And guess what? It doesn't matter whether you buy it for yourself or as a gift for friends and family, because inevitably you will end up playing it with them. 6 games included with the purchase of an Xbox 360 Arcade. While supplies last, inside marked packages. Prices start at $199. Prices are estimated retail price. Actual price may vary. Xbox 360. More games, more choice, more fun. Xbox 360. Jump in!
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks for joining us tonight. 1-800-723-8029. We'll go to calls in just a moment after I introduce our guest. Our liberal tonight is David Serta. David Serta is a leading attorney in the city of Chicago. He was a longtime supporter, early supporter of Barack Obama, maxed out for him, and he's a civil rights attorney coming from one of the first names in justice in the state of Illinois. Again, David, always nice to have you with us. Also joining us this evening is Fran Eaton, and she is the editor of Illinois Review, which is where the conservative community of Illinois gets together and blogs together and has been very active in Republican conservative politics for a long, long time in this state. And also with us is Mary Mitchell, who is one of the top columnists in the United States and a longtime columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times, a member of that paper's editorial board, who last week made the big time. She was a guest on Meet the Press.
That was wild.
That was very impressive.
When did
you get the call?
Oh, he asked me during the Democratic Tom Brokaw asked me during the Democratic National Convention, would I be interested in doing Meet the Press? And I said, oh, sure. And he called me the day after Obama's historic election, and I was just flabbergasted. It was fun. He's such a nice guy, and it was.
You will be asked back. You did a very good job.
Thank you.
And thank you for doing Beyond the Beltway.
Thank you.
This week, my question to you is, and before we get back to the discussion and take some calls, we had a lot of calls coming in. I want to take a moment because your column, Mary, describing what it meant to you as an African American and as a journalist. When you were there in the big rally the night that Barack Obama won, explain to the audience what it not only meant to you, but what it has meant in the couple of weeks since he has now been president-elect. What is the attitude? What is the spirit? What is the sense of being in the African-American communities of Chicago?
Well, people are just walking around on a cloud, full of pride. Pride for Chicago, pride for the African-American community. But more, when you talk to people about it, they say this is about America. You know, they don't say it's just, oh, about us. It's about America. It's pride in the fact that many of us thought we would never live to see the day that an African-American would really be elected to go to Washington and to go to the White House. That's real. I mean, that's how people felt about it. And to know that America has progressed to the point that they could look at him and see, you know, his intellect and his vision and honor him for his dream, that meant a lot to African-Americans. It really did.
And some of the stories that have been out since he was elected have been very, very ugly stories. They've been stories about chanting children, about assassination. There have been stories of gun sales. There have been stories of fear and threats and things of that nature. How are those stories playing? Because it's an ugly side of what should be a very positive story for the country.
Well, first of all, I don't think, especially African Americans, they're not naive. They saw the results of the election. They saw that the South basically succeeded from the Union again, where many states were able to look at Barack Obama and judge him by his character and judge him by his intellect and by the campaign that he ran. There were still people in the South, mostly, and the rural areas who thought he's still a Muslim. I mean, come on. How many times do you have to say he's not a Muslim? So I don't think African-Americans have any thought that racism is dead in this country. There are still people who are racist. There will always be people, I think, who will judge somebody based on their ethnicity or their race. But more people, what that election said, more of us get it. More of us are ready and able to move beyond the labels of race.
Fran Eaton, in the conservative community that you have your pulse on, what's been the reaction to the president-elect and what that is likely to mean for the country for the next 4 years, perhaps 8 years, and what it's likely also to mean to local Republican and conservative politics in the home state of the president-elect?
Well, I did everything I possibly could to get him not to be elected, but I wasn't that excited about John McCain, and that was a part of the problem. I think it would have been more of an exciting race had we had a little bit more of an exciting candidate. But I think the most interesting thing on this is now the ones who for the past 8 years have hated everything that the establishment stood for, Bush and the conservatives that were the neocons, all those nasty people that were running this nation down the drain. Suddenly the gears are shifted and there's going to be a pride in America and a pride in everything that's going on. And the very ones who were the critics are now going to be the ones that are defending the establishment. And that's going to be a dramatic change for those who made a living, you know, being a critic. And I think, you know, we live in a cynical kind of a time where that, if you do cheer too much, you're a little bit of a Pollyannish type of a person. So you really can't trust the person who thinks everybody's perfect. Anyone's perfect.
Do they see it as an opportunity? I mean, do they see this as is this an opportunity that may come back in 4 years, or do they think we're seeing the beginning of a transformation in American politics?
Well, we were holding our breath watching for who he was going to begin appointing to serve on the team with him. Some of them make us very jittery. Others of us, others are calming us down as far as the Clinton. It's going to be a rerun of Clinton. I'm not seeing where the change is so much as a rerun of 8 years ago. Of course, they're experienced and qualified as far as that goes, which I understand the excitement of having them back in that position to make those decisions again. But it makes we're seeing Bill Clinton, who saw the benefit of welfare reform and signed that into law. And we're seeing that type of an administration coming into play. We're seeing an administration that signed the Defense of Marriage Act in the middle of the night. That was Clinton that did that. So if the people that affected Clinton and to moderate like that are the ones that are also counseling Barack Obama. I wonder if some of the liberals on the most leftist side of it are going to feel a little bit betrayed, or if they expect Obama not to make the radical moves because that's what Bill Clinton did in 92, and that turned over everything in 94.
David, we'll see. Serna, I'm going to ask you two questions. First of all, keep your liberal hat on. React to what Fran just said, because it gets back to a question I asked before one of the breaks, and that is, with all the focus on the economy, is it going to buy time for the president-elect to keep his promises as it relates to foreign affairs and specifically the war in Iraq?
I think that the president-elect is going to keep his campaign promises and do what he said he was going to do, and he's going to have to do many things at the same time. And he is going to move forward with his plan on withdrawing troops from Iraq, which is already underway mm-hmm. in part by under the Bush administration.
Mm-hmm. But the selection of Hillary Clinton, does that – As a liberal, as someone, by the way, historically, I mean, you were opposed to the war and spoke on this program very eloquently years ago, long before it was fashionable, I might say, to do that. Does her ascension to Secretary of State, does that send a signal, as Fran just said, that maybe the centrists are going to be in charge of this administration?
No. President Obama is going to be in charge of this administration.
And but is he a centrist? Is he a centrist?
Well, I don't want to label him left or center, but he's going to carry out the policies that he has spoken about over the last 2 years when he's campaigned. I think he's going to do exactly what he said he was going to do, and that the fact that he has some people in the Clinton administration does not mean he's going to, follow in the footsteps of President Clinton. But he is going to, give marching orders to his cabinet, and they are going to follow his lead.
Mary Mitchell, and then I want to come back to David with another follow-up.
Well, this is very interesting, the whole question of whether it's going to be centrist or whether it's going to be moderate or whatever. Why is this interesting? It's because the whole idea behind the Barack Obama campaign was to move us away from those kind of labels. I had a brief interview with Valerie Jarrett, which is his good friend and co-chair of his transition team, where she talked about that. And what I found interesting is that the language has turned from hope to pragmatism. Hillary Clinton represents a pragmatic choice. And why is that? Because he's got to get stuff done.
But here's a reality. This is what I've been talking, for the last, several months when I talk to reporters or people from all over the country. They say, well, you know him. What's he really like? He is a pragmatist.
Yes, he is.
All of those present votes, I mean, those are also the actions of a pragmatist. You don't want to tick off either side. So, I mean, to me, he is going to govern as a centrist.
So you're saying he was deceptive in all the hope and the change that he was
offering? But you don't have to be.
You can offer hope and change.
And still be a pragmatist.
And still be pragmatic. So, and you may be singing the praises, just as you were in describing Bill Clinton a few moments ago. You may be singing the praises of his pragmatism.
I look forward to him not being as bad as I expect him to be. That would be delightful.
I think he's going to be different than President Clinton. One of the things that troubled me about President Clinton is he kind of, took polls and decided, what could be done. And I think Barack Obama has an idea of what should be done, and he's going to move people in that direction so that it can be done.
I would agree with that.
Follow-up question to you is, as a Hispanic and as a Democrat, what has been the reaction within the Hispanic community to the pride that they see in the African-American community?
I think it's the same, that, people judge Barack Obama not on the color of his skin but on the content of his character, and that gives hope to all people of color.
And in response to a question I had a couple of weeks ago on this program, when are we likely to have a Hispanic president? I want you to think about that answer. We're heading to a break. 1-800-723-8210. For those people standing on the line, we've got a full board of lights. I promise you, and also those out in radio and television land, we'll be hearing from those calls. In addition, be on the edge of your seat for David Serta's response to my brilliant question when we come back in Chicago.
We'll be right back. Believe me, I'm a guy who likes to get his money's worth. That's why I'm gaga over Clear Eyes for Dry Eyes. I get my money's worth because Clear Eyes for Dry Eyes gives me soothing comfort that lasts up to 8 hours. Why does it last so long? Because it stays in your eyes, that's why. The soothing moisturizers in Clear Eyes for Dry Eyes are specially formulated to stay put. They're the no-drip drops. For up to 8 hours of soothing comfort, get Clear Eyes for Dry Eyes. Use as directed.
I'm Errol Squires, inventor of Relieve One-Day Cold Sore Symptom Treatment. I invented Relieve because I wanted a very effective, natural treatment for cold sores that worked really fast. Relieve works so well and so fast for me, my family, and friends, I wanted to help other people who suffer from cold sores. I think people are smart enough to know if something works. If you suffer from cold sores, try Relieve and find out if it works for you. Relieve is comprised of botanical extracts and is guaranteed. Buy Relieve now at all major stores.
From Peoria, Illinois to Boston, Massachusetts, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. We're going to go to calls in just a moment, but David, the question, a Hispanic president, how real is it in your lifetime, and you're a young man, mid-30s?
No, I'm 40, we're the same age as the president, 47.
Oh, really?
Okay. I'm older than him, actually, by a few months.
You hold your age very well. Okay, within your lifetime. Within your lifetime.
Within my lifetime. Absolutely. There be a Hispanic... Could happen in 8 years.
Really, who?
We'll see. You know, President, no one thought of Barack Obama as becoming the next president of the United States, but until, you know, or an African American becoming the president of the United States. But in 2004, when you saw his speech at the convention, I thought right then he should run.
I did too, but
it's possible, you know, it's possible for someone to emerge in 8 years.
I said, when someone asked that question a couple of weeks ago in this program, almost never. Almost
I didn't
never.
Think it was going to happen in my almost life until never. I saw a speech.
But my point is that in the Barack Obama case, the stars were lined up. It was a right. very unique situation. Mm-hmm. You had an articulate spokesman running for an office from a major state, African-American, Democratic primary, I mean, Democratic convention. I mean, the stars were lined up, and then he hit the Grand Slam homer when he had the opportunity. To line all that up and then to be able to get the money and to win the primary and everything else, those are maybe once-in-a-lifetime moments. And my point would be is, you know, we have one Hispanic governor now who wants to leave. That's Bill Richardson. He is destined to be the Secretary of Commerce.
Right.
He's had his run. I didn't think he ran a terribly impressive primary campaign. There is not a Hispanic in the United States Senate. To me, the building blocks that you need to have in place to get to a position, it seems to me, are 30 or 40 years away.
Oh, I don't think so at all.
Okay. You know, well, we'll come back here in 40 years. We'll see if you were as perceptive as you were about the war. Let's go to some calls. Let's go to Jim listening to us in South Elgin, Line 1 on WLS, our flagship station. Go ahead, Jim.
Good evening. I would like to let you know there's two Hispanics. There's Salazar from Colorado, who's in the Senate.
You're right.
So is Menendez, I think, from New Jersey. Is he any senator?
No, he's a representative.
Okay, well, and I don't like either one of them, but anyways.
Mel Martinez as well, you're right.
That's right. Well, that's okay. Listen, we can't all be 100%. Anyways, a lot of the skittishness of the stock market, I think is a lot of what Barack wants to do as far as, higher taxes, and there's even talk about taking away people's, pension plans and KEOs and IRAs and things like that and bringing it under the umbrella of Social Security. So I think if Barack wanted to really calm things down, he should just come out and say, hey, you know what, we're going to have a moratorium, any tax increases like you guys were talking about before. But if he were to publicly say that, I think it might go a long way, and I was wondering what the panel thought about it.
You know, he ran a campaign for 2 years. There were three debates. He said the same thing over and over and over about his tax plan. He's not going to raise taxes on people making less than $200,000 a year. And now he's even...
Well, Joe Biden said 150, so who knows what the final answer is going to be. It doesn't matter. Raising taxes, look at the luxury tax and what it did to the automobile and fur and, boating and aviation industries, in the early 90s.
Well, it was repealed
because higher taxes killed business. So Barack should come out and say, you know what, we're not going to raise anybody's taxes.
he's
even the super rich, because those people can spend the money that generates income for people.
Well, sir, as I mentioned earlier, that was hinted today. I don't think it's the type of thing you're going to have a press release on or a press announcement on. I mean, it may evolve that it's going to be a low priority, but I don't think they're going to do it politically. I don't think that's going to be wise. Let us go to number 7, Jim in Peoria, listening to us tonight on WMBD. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Bruce.
Yes.
My company went through a bankruptcy, and it's a long, difficult, complicated process, but as far as the automakers, I think the government should kind of back them in a corner and say, look, you go into a bankruptcy, we will take that $25 billion and we will finance you through the bankruptcy procedure, because they can still operate, but they have to have capital. And when you come out on the other side, you are leaner and meaner. And it's like the rubber hits the road. It's like sending an alcoholic to rehab. They will know what they have to do. And I think that's what the government should do.
Well, also, I mean, once you go through that, as you know, there's certain things that you have to respond to because of the bankruptcy laws. And one of the things that came out in the discussion today was not only the size of the union contracts, and again, members of the UAW, they tend to be sort of a whipping boy, almost as equal to the mismanagement of the companies. And I think a suggestion that was made today is that you really needed the head of the UAW before Congress as well, because they've got to swallow hard. They've got to make some significant changes. And they also talked about something that we haven't talked about, is they mentioned that, I guess, they have like 7,000 dealers. And the automobile dealer contracts that exist are very, very restrictive. And they were saying that the reality of doing business in America, if you're selling cars, you don't need 7,000 dealerships. You might need about 1,500. Well, that's a huge change. But again, unless management, frankly, has a gun at their head, they're not going to respond. And I think that bankruptcy is probably the way to go. So if I was in Congress, I would not vote for that bailout. And as I said last week, I suggested that the oil companies loan the money to the automobile companies. They're the ones that they've got this big windfall right now. Let them use some of their money to help their big vendors, the people that make the gas guzzlers. So let's get the oil companies involved in this. On that note, we're going to say farewell in hour number one. Our thanks to our guests, David Serta and Mary Mitchell of the Chicago Sun-Times, and Fran Eaton has joined us. We'll all be back for hour number two. If you're watching us on television, we will see you next week.
Hey, Tanya Roberts here, and I want to know, where are you going on your next romantic getaway? Well, how about 3 days and 2 nights in Las Vegas? And what about, you don't pay a dime for it? That's right. Act like a high roller in Vegas and pay nothing for it. It's all part of our celebration of Vegas's newest 5-star resort, Tahiti Village. We want you to get out of Dodge. Stir up a little romantic magic in the most exciting city on earth with a complimentary second honeymoon, all on Tahiti Village. Come on, you know you deserve it. You know you want it. Las Vegas is calling. So stop what you're doing and call the special toll-free number, 877-38-GO-WIN. Oh, and as a bonus, if you call right now, they're going to throw in tickets to a hot show right on the strip. Can we say high roller treatment, baby? So call 877-38-GO-WIN for all the exciting details. That's 877-38-GO-WIN. Call now.
Imagine this. You walk into your apartment and, oh boy, you've been robbed. Yep, somebody definitely broke in there and made off with the goods, didn't they? Your flat-screen TV, your laptop, and even your race car-shaped bed's gone. Just a devastating loss. The good news is, if you call GEICO, you could be protected for as little as $12 a month. Yeah, seriously, just $12. So first, call GEICO, and second, maybe think about buying a grown-up bed, yeah?
For a fast, easy rate quote on renter's insurance, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
Do you suffer from cold sores? Relieve One Day Cold Sore Symptom Treatment is out to prove how fast it really works. If you suffer from those nasty sores, try Relieve and find out for yourself if Relieve works really fast for you. Relieve is spelled R-E-L-E-E-V. It's easy to find and is in all major drugstores. So if you get cold sores, remember to get Relieve now and keep it ready to use the moment a cold sore attacks.
Hey, you want to hear some holiday joy? This season, when you buy an Xbox 360 or an Xbox 360 Elite, you get two bonus games included. DreamWorks Kung Fu Panda and Lego Indiana Jones The Original Adventures, rated everyone 10 and up. The Xbox 360 and Xbox 360 Elite have a hard drive with massive storage, super smooth textures, surround sound capability, wireless controller, headset, the works, and two bonus games included. While supplies last inside marked packages. Xbox 360, more games, more choice, more fun. Xbox 360, jump in!
Healthy lips should never go naked. So, are you going to slip on ChapStick Moisturizer? It's made of 10 moisturizers, so it feels light and smooth and ultra hydrating. Or there's something completely new for you to put on. It's new ChapStick True Shimmer with shimmering highlights to give lips a beautiful, radiant shine every time you put it on. So if you want lips to look and feel healthy, never let your lips go naked. Always wear ChapStick. Use as directed.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont. We continue with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight featuring commentary by conservative Fran Eaton, liberal attorney David Serta, and columnist Mary Mitchell of the Chicago Sun-Times. And our phone lines remain open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. We've had a lot of people calling in, so let's head right to calls. Let's go to Chris in Wheeling, Illinois, listening to us on our flagship station, WLS. Go ahead, Chris. You're on the air. Chris is not there, so let us go to, how about Mike, line 8 in KTKZ land out in Sacramento, California. Are you there?
Yes, hello.
Go ahead.
Yeah, hi there. I just believe that as far as the bailout and the things going into the future regarding Obama's plans, it's pretty much the same as it worked with during the campaign, where ABC through PBS, BBC, etc., and all the newspapers are pretty much in bed with Obama, and they're not going to be telling anything that disturbs the peace, so to speak. And
what do you mean by that, sir?
Well,
is the media hiding the story that the economy's in the tank?
Well, that's obvious, but. Well, there's lots of stuff that's not being told about it, and out here in California, we can just see that's the wave of the future. This gerrymandered legislature has just literally destroyed the fifth most powerful economy on earth. Hundreds of thousands of businesses have been forced
out
of
the country. But how is that? You seem to be blaming the media for this, and I'm trying to follow your train of thought on this.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. The media is only part of it. I mean, you can't just blame the media entirely. They're just part of the puzzle. The Democrats out here, which I used to be one of very fervently, I might add, have very carefully engendered kind of using the media as a compliant partner, vast control systems which just completely lock out anybody but them.
And, okay, thanks for your call. Let's move to St. Charles, Illinois. Steve is listening to us on WLS. You're on the air. Steve, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead.
Okay, I wanted to make the point that Barack Obama stated that he was going to decrease taxes for the middle class and that he was only going to raise taxes for corporations and the rich. Well, the problem with that is corporations do not pay taxes. What they do is they up their prices, and it affects the middle class. So what Democrats do to up the tax for everyone, they always say, well, we're going to raise the taxes to rich and the people who own corporations. And all they're going to do is they're going to increase taxes for everyone, and they're going to ruin this economy.
Well, listen, let's find out. The most people would say that the economy is already ruined. And let's also put this in context. Barack Obama is not president yet. He's got about 58 days before he becomes president.
That's true.
And the question is, promises that are made in campaigns, sometimes they're followed through on, sometimes they're not. And before you get all excited about who's going to get taxed and who's not going to get taxed, let's wait and see, because the reality is that the requirements of the economy and keeping the economy strong are going to trump anything that any candidate said, whether they're running for president or Congress. And watch Congress as well.
Can I say one more thing?
Congress is equally important. Yes. One last word to you, then we're going to move on.
I noticed that Mary Mitchell kind of laughed when I said something about the economy. They did a poll for people who voted in this last election, and 50% did not even know that the Democrats controlled Congress. Our economy has gone sour since the Democrats controlled Congress. And the reason why, and when did our economy start going bad? It was because of the people could not pay their mortgages on their loans. Well, who came up with the idea that these banks had to give out loans to people who couldn't afford them? The Democrats. People like Barney Frank and Chris Dodd. So she can laugh all she wants, but the fact of the matter is it is the Democrats in Congress who ruin this economy, not George Bush.
Okay.
I don't know how I got the brunt of that man's anger, but the bottom line, I was laughing because it was ruined when he said it was ruined. We know it's ruined.
Let's go to Youngstown, Ohio, talking about a town that's had tough economic times, and you still do. Go ahead, listening to us on WKBN.
Yeah, I'm probably going to get run out of this town because if our local plant shuts down, they'll hang a close sign on this whole area. But this loan, this so-called bridge loan, isn't a bridge to nowhere. It's simply a bridge to the next loan. We know there is no way with the corporate structure of the car industry that $25 billion will do anything but give them a few more months of existence. We have a culture built on a Ponzi program that keeps collapsing at its base. We add more and more pensioners to a broke plan, just like we're going to see the breakdown of Medicare, of Social Security. I mean, when those guys flew in with their huge corporate jets, it reminded me of a guy stepping out of a stretch limo with his top hat in hand and begging for contributions. I mean, they've learned absolutely nothing. They went out when they were making money, huge buying sprees. They bought every other auto corporation they could in other lands, bid them up against each other, and now they're stuck selling them off for a fraction of their value. You have to let them go into bankruptcy to end all the welfare that's being passed out. You can't have a handful of workers making less and less cars, paying more and more people.
I think, you know, Alan, I think you've got your hand on the pulse. I don't think there's anybody that disagrees with that. I guess the question I would ask you, just, you know, we played this game last week. I'm going to let you play it because you're talking about the Lordstown plant, which is not far from Youngstown. My question to you is, what happens? Let's say that you get your wish. Let's say Congress says, you know what, not a penny. Take us through the spiral as you see it from that point on.
Well, I'm hoping that they just restructure, that they don't collapse. What we need here, okay, let me go against some of the prevailing.
Well, here's my point. If they restructure,
if they restructure,
wait a minute, let me finish.
Go ahead.
If they restructure, and part of the restructuring says, you know what, we think that Lordstown's not very productive, so we're going to shut down the Lordstown, Ohio plant. What does that do to those within the sound of your voice listening tonight on WKBN in Youngstown?
It basically ruins us, but our plant has been rated very highly. The thing is this, though. Sometimes you have to look beyond your own personal finances. You have to look to the country as a whole, which nobody seems to do. I mean, futuristic planning is 3 months down the road, not 30 years down the road. Sometimes you have to worry about your children and your grandchildren bearing this unimaginable debt they're going to bear. And, Matt, throw in one other thing. I'm not counting on Barack to save us. When he said things like his green energy plans will be built in America. What was he saying? Them stupid foreigners can't build turbines, can't build solar cells. I'm saying we're going to lose a lot of that industry too, unless.
No, I think what he's saying is that those things don't have to be built exclusively by foreign workers. That workers that work in U.S. industrial areas, including the American automobile companies, maybe they can retool and relearn. Maybe they're building it. Maybe what happens in Detroit and happens in the areas around Youngstown is maybe we're making windmills. Maybe that's the answer.
I think the point is there's a lot of anger out there that's resolved from the original plan that went over, and people have been unhappy, and they're going to get angrier the more demands are made like this.
No, I think, and again, as you said, the automobile manufacturers did not help themselves last week when they went to Washington. Back shortly with a lot more calls.
I'm here to tell you that Geico.com is easy to use. I bet you already knew that. A website that's convenient and fast. Well, really, had no idea. Of course it's fast and easy. Now, allow me to go off script and tell you why Geico.com is so great. First, you can get a free rate quote right then and there. You can update your policy, make a payment, even report and track a claim. There's the news. There's the big aha. Sorry, just had to get it off my chest.
For a free rate quote, visit Geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
I'm Errol Squires, inventor of Relieve One-Day Cold Sore Symptom Treatment. I invented Relieve because I wanted a very effective, natural treatment for cold sores that worked really fast. Relieve works so well and so fast for me, my family, and friends, I wanted to help other people who suffer from cold sores. I think people are smart enough to know if something works. If you suffer from cold sores, try Relieve and find out if it works for you. Relieve is comprised of botanical extracts and is guaranteed. Buy Relieve now at all major stores.
From Boardman, Ohio to Sugarland, Texas, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. And to David Serta, you were making a comment about Hank Paulson and his faulty crystal ball this past week.
Well, he said that there was no major financial institution that was in any trouble, and then Citibank's stock went down 64%. I think it's ill-advised to make a statement unless you're sure of what you're talking about.
And I agreed and said that, you know, trying to calm the public with a lie is very detrimental to us all.
And again, I want to go back for those people that have just tuned in. We began this program this evening by talking about a suggestion that James Baker, former Treasury Secretary to George Bush I, and also former Secretary of State, he made this morning on Meet the Press, and he suggested that maybe President Bush and President-elect Obama should get together and have some discussion and come up with some joint announcement. It doesn't even have to be a formal plan. Just send some signal so that the economic communities can react in a positive way. And everyone around the table here thought that was a bad idea. We didn't get anybody calling in saying it was a good idea. So if you just tuned in, we'd like to get your reaction. 1-800-723-8289. Tomorrow in Chicago, which is the political capital of America, the president-elect is going to introduce many of his economic team members. Tim Geithner, president of the New York Federal Reserve, is destined to be the Secretary of Treasury. That talk about a good news, bad news. I've got good news, Tim. You're going to be in my cabinet.
Yeah,
the bad
kidding.
News is you're going to be Secretary of Treasury.
Yeah.
And also the National Economic Council, headed by, projected to be, Lawrence Summers, a former Treasury Secretary under Bill Clinton and former president of Harvard. And also there's, although this is not coming tomorrow, of course, we've discussed last week the likelihood that Hillary Clinton is going to become Secretary of State. Bill Richardson is the odds-on favorite now to become the Secretary of Commerce. And Tom Daschle at HHS, the Attorney General, Eric Holder, waiting for a confirmation on some of these. And Janet Napolitano is under consideration. She's the governor of Arizona. She to head the Department of Homeland Security, which is interesting that if she can't control the borders of her own state, I don't know why she should be put in charge of the whole schmear, but that may be the case. You want
very
to stand
different.
Up? You want to stand
very
up
different
for her?
Issues. Very different issues. I think it's not the borders of her state. I mean, illegal immigration is a big problem across the country.
I was surprised with the Napolitano. Appointment. I really thought it would be Bill Ayers, because who better to do Homeland Security than a former terrorist? And I really thought that's the way it would go, but it didn't happen.
Boy, you guys are so bitter.
The campaign is over.
I thought yes.
The campaign is over.
So bitter.
Robert Gates keeping a Republican holdover in at Secretary of Defense. Again, it's not a done deal, but as someone who opposed the war, is that the best place to put a Republican in your view, David Sertl?
Well, I think that it gives some continuity to the Secretary of Defense, having him stay over, and also leaves a Republican there. And President-elect said that he wanted some bipartisan views in his cabinet, and I think that's a good decision for the time being, for the months to come.
Interesting decision. I mean, it's sort of like saying, okay, you're going to leave a Republican around to clean up, to continue the cleanup of the fallout behind the war in Iraq. So I just think that's a interesting choice.
He's going to get
a good choice.
I'm not going to go good and bad right now. I think interesting is how I would frame
what
it.
What do you think? I mean, the people want to be safe. They want to be secure.
Right. And I think
a lot
it
of
does...
people still think that those words should are more Republican words, although that isn't the way it happened this November. But
I have
a mindset that feels that way.
I have a son-in-law in Baghdad right now, and they are nervous about, you know, what lies ahead. I mean, they all want to come home, and you're right, they are coming home. And the 4th Infantry it's on its way back within the next month or so, and there probably won't be anyone sent back to replace them at that time. So it is whittling itself down, and it is working out. The ones that we talked to, this is anecdotal, were looking for John McCain and the security of John McCain and someone who they knew. So I think this the military, it's of interest to what they think about who's leading here as well and who they can trust as they have their lives on the line out there. So I think that might be, I'm not sure how evidently they can get along, and he feels like he can trust him, which is key. So it'll be I doubt that it will be throughout the whole administration. He'll probably phase out as the war is phased out as well. So it would be a holdover.
David, I want to ask you, I mentioned in the first segment or the first hour of the broadcast tonight that when you were a guest on this program a long, long time ago, you opposed a U.S. entry in the war in Iraq. As you look back on the entire episode, what does it say about the future of Iraq if we leave now? I mean, so much has been invested, so much human capital has been lost, so much financial capital has been invested as well. If we pull out now without some clear definition of victory, however you define it, your definition of it, is there a way really just to easily get out as you would like them to be out? Barack Obama said 16 months, and he was going to give everybody the marching orders when he took office.
I think he is going to withdraw troops from Iraq as quickly as he can. I think that what's left behind is going to be an unstable government with many problems, but that is the best that we're going to be able to do at this point.
How would you define victory, or is there no way to define it?
You know, people cling. You know, John McCain's mantra was, "We have to leave Iraq with victory," and I don't think we're going to be able to leave Iraq with victory. We didn't leave Vietnam with a victory. We should have gotten out of Vietnam long before that we did, and people were clinging to this idea we have to leave with honor and victory. Well, we're not going to be able to do that in Iraq.
I was never clear about what do you mean by victory.
What
is victory in this case? The fact that you were able to overthrow the leader of that country, the fact that you have Al-Qaeda on the run someplace. I mean, they're not totally in control anymore. The fact that you began to see the workings of a rebuilding of Iraq, and they have money, don't forget they have their own money now, is that victory enough for us? What do we want to happen? Because I don't see it us being able to leave there and say, now they have a democracy and everything's going to work well.
I think some semblance of a peaceful life there, the ability to walk the streets, some semblance of that.
But we're not we can't police them. We'd have to stay there forever to guarantee that.
But that would be victory. I mean, to some extent, if the dictator is gone, there's a new government in place. The people elected that government. Their oil revenues are in the process of rebuilding their country. And you can walk the streets of Kirkuk or Baghdad in relative security. Then is that not victory?
No, well, I don't think we'll ever obtain that because the tensions and
what
the
part of it
factions,
don't we?
The idea that we can stay there long enough to guarantee that there will never be any uprisings, that the disputes that led to people being shot in the street and unable to walk down their own streets, that we as Americans will be able to control that, I think that's wrong. That we're never going to reach that point. I think when you get to the first few things that you name, the fact that the dictator is not there, the fact that the oil reserves are now can be used to rebuild the country, those things, I think that we've already accomplished a lot of that. But the idea that we can guarantee this country, this nation, that the all the disputes and all the factions that they've lived with for centuries, that we can somehow change that, I just don't think we'll ever be able to do that.
I hear tones of isolationism. I'm really interested in this because is there anything, David, that you would say that you would have done in reaction to 9/11? Was there any country that you would have taken on in particular? Because this is a
different war.
Afghanistan was the answer.
Yes.
In that even though some of those from Syria and they were from other countries as well. So what I'm saying, and we are in Afghanistan, although it was delayed.
No, the problem is that we should not have turned, you know, to Iraq when we had not done the job in Afghanistan. And because we didn't do the job in Afghanistan, Al-Qaeda has grown more powerful in Afghanistan. And now we have to go into Afghanistan with more military presence. But I think we also have to do more economically in Afghanistan. And what we shouldn't have done in Iraq is to invade a country when we didn't have a clear understanding that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. The whole thing was a lie.
And it is because we are actually fighting Al-Qaeda, right?
And Al-Qaeda was not in Iraq.
We're not.
We're fighting the wrong guys.
Are you saying Al-Qaeda was not in Iraq?
Right.
Victory is, as my son-in-law says, is fighting the battle over there and not here. And that's why he says, I am there, because I want to keep the battle away from America, where that we're not living in terror. You and I are not afraid.
So we have victory then.
We have to be aggressive to keep them away. And we have had victory for since 2001.
Mm-hmm. So we should stay over there forever?
Well, you know, I don't know the answer because you're right. You would want them to be self-sufficient. They have pride as a country. They don't want to have to be nursed off us forever.
Well, let me ask you this. Here's the question. If they stayed there forever, some troops stayed there, not necessarily in combat, but if they stayed there forever, and we never had an attack, domestic terrorist attack in the United States again, would it be worth the investment of having troops there forever? That's the question. I want to get reaction from everybody when we come back. 1-800-723-8289. I want that reaction from the people on the phone as well. 1-800-723-8289.
Who's always there for you? Your mum? Maybe, yeah, but sometimes she's a bit chatty with you. Oi, when are you going to get a girlfriend business? Now, GEICO, they're always there for you. They have been for over 70 years. They insure over 8 million policyholders, and their customer satisfaction is at 97%. With GEICO service, no wonder it's the third largest automobile insurance company. Your mum might cook better, but everything else, it's a very close call.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
This holiday season, live your moment with friends, family, and the Xbox 360 Arcade. Now you can enjoy the Xbox 360 Arcade right out of the box with 6 super cool games included. And guess what? It doesn't matter whether you buy it for yourself or as a gift for friends and family, because inevitably you will end up playing it with them. 6 games included with the purchase of an Xbox 360 Arcade. While supplies last, inside marked packages. Prices start at $199. Prices are estimated retail price. Actual price may vary. Xbox 360. More games, more choice, more fun. Xbox 360. Jump in!
From Grand Rapids, Michigan to Fayetteville, North Carolina, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Our liberal tonight is David Serta. He is a civil rights attorney. He's in private practice with his own firm, dealing primarily in issues of police brutality, and was also once upon a time the president of the Hispanic Lawyers Association of Illinois. Also joining us this evening is Fran Eaton. She is the editor of the Illinois Review, which is where conservatives gather in the state of Illinois to blog and to spy on the opposition and do
they spy on us too.
They spy on you.
Yeah.
It's what's great about the internet. Mm-hmm. Everybody reading everybody else's blogs. And also joining us this evening is one of the country's leading columnists, Mary Mitchell, a longtime columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times, a member of that paper's editorial board, and a graduate of Columbia College, where she got her journalism degree and has been winner of virtually every major award that journalism bestows on journalists. And again, great to have you all with us this evening. The question I want to ask, which I posed before the break, I'll try to restate it, and that is there has been some concern that there may be troops in Iraq for a long, long time, whether it's 100 years, 50 years, 75 years. And my question is, if that happens, and one of the pluses of that is that there never is another domestic terrorist attack in the United States, or terrorist attack in the United States, launched from Al-Qaeda, isn't it worth the price of that investment? Mary Mitchell.
Well, you know, yes, the way you state it, if there's never a terrorist attack again in the United States, yes, I can see why you come to the conclusion that it is worth the investment. But I would believe that if America had a presence in Iraq for many, many, many years to come, they're no longer the liberators. They become the invaders. And then that would have its own lead to its own set of problems just in the region. So I don't think that we can come to the conclusion that them being there for a long, long time, that somehow that's going to translate to us not ever having to deal with terrorism.
By the way, Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11.
Okay, but what's your answer to the same question?
I disagree with the premise. I think that that Al-Qaeda is one. First, they weren't in Iraq before 9/11, and now they are in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and other countries, and that leaving troops to occupy Iraq is not going to make us safer. And by the way, the Iraqi government wants us out.
But here's my question. I want.
I would love to be able to say we put troops in Iraq and then we're safe.
I'd be happy. I don't want to challenge that way. I don't want to challenge the premise of your answer, but I do want to put it in context. We've been in the 20th century. We were at war with Germany. We were at war with Japan. We were at war with Korea. 50, 55 years after those wars, we have U.S. troops standing fast in those countries. There has never been, since that, since we put the troops there, there has never been a war at the DMZ. There's never been a war in Germany. There's never been a war in Japan. Now, none of those troops would be described as occupying forces. Are they welcomed with open arms by residents of those countries? In many cases, no. But have they kept the peace? And what I'm arguing is that when John McCain said, you know, we may have troops there in 95 years, which got him in a lot of trouble, certainly liberals and those opposed to the war said that we wanted to be fighting for 95 years. That's not what he meant. But it seems to me that if you don't understand that, you're missing a lesson of history. When the United States goes to war, we leave troops back there to make sure that another war doesn't happen again. And isn't that a plus? If it's not a plus, I would say, hey, Germany, we don't think you're going to invade Poland anymore. Let's take the troops out of Germany and let's send them someplace else. Let's send them, let's put them, on the front guard in Afghanistan.
Am I missing something here? Do we do that in Vietnam? We still have troops there, too. In Vietnam, we still have troops there.
We do not. I don't know whether we have troops in Vietnam. I don't believe we do. But I'm talking about the larger,
well, we live
the
in
larger
a,
wars.
Right. Well, now we live in a different world.
Well, also, there was a situation there where the the countries basically sort of, you know, merged.
There's another whole issue here, and you have to be honest about the fact that if Barack Obama was put in that situation, God forbid, in the days to come, there is a loyalty to him, and where that you're going to expect that he will always make the right decision. Well, I'll take that back. You expect him to surround himself with good people that will give him counsel so that he can be equipped to make the right decision. And believe it or not, he won't always make the right decision. Barack Obama won't. I know that's a rude awakening.
He said it himself.
So, but in times to come, you will tend to defend his decisions because you like Barack Obama. It does become a personal thing. It does, as time goes by. You defend. For me to say that Iraq, the war, I'm sorry that it has worked out the way it is, but I could come back to you and say, George Bush made the decisions based on the counsel that was given him. There was not an agenda or an axe to grind. He was responding to the information he had. That's why he made the decision he did. So what I'm saying is we have to be a little bit sympathetic to the immediate reaction there. There is regret, but we have wisdom in hindsight now that we didn't before.
No, the fact is that they lied, that they drummed up a reason to invade Iraq. They lied. They knew the intelligence did not support what they were saying. They fed it to Colin Powell. Powell gave that speech, and there we went off to war in Iraq, and we shouldn't have done it. But going back to Bruce's question, Bruce, this is a different world where, you know, you're not fighting governments with armies. You are now wrestling with the problem that a few people put together can commit terrorist acts on our country, and that having troops in Iraq is not going to prevent that from happening in Afghanistan or Pakistan or coming from Syria or other places.
Historically, if we went into Iraq and we broke it, you're arguing we went into Iraq and we broke it, right? If we broke it, don't we have some responsibility to fix it?
Well,
because people would say, you know what? You broke Japan, too. You broke Germany, too.
But we left
troops there to keep the peace. And the other question, which I want to follow up on what Fran had to say, and this gets back into, and by the way, you know, your point about whether George Bush, you know, lied to the American people, is that's your opinion. There's certainly debatable evidence that would counter that, although that's your argument. And, you know, we could be here until the cows come home. We're not going to have agreement on that. But the one thing that I remember, in addition to weapons of mass destruction, the one thing I remember that George Bush said over and over and over again was, we're going to take it to them. That's when he was showing his swagger, which, again, in retrospect, probably wasn't a good idea. Swagger doesn't work well in the Middle East. But what he did say was, we're going to fight them there, so we're going to fight them in Baghdad, so we're not fighting them in New York City.
Right.
Now, that was a rationale. Now, Mary, that's true. That strategy worked because we are fighting them there. Unfortunately, over 3,000 Americans have died protecting the people who live in New York City and Chicago and all over the country. That also is the answer to the question. That is one of the reasons why we have not had an attack in the United States.
I don't know how you can. I do not know how you can say definitively that is the reason.
Would you acknowledge
perhaps?
I'll
give you perhaps.
Perhaps.
I think that we're less safe. That we should have invested.
That's your
our
opinion,
investment
David.
In Afghanistan and in Pakistan, where Al Qaeda was. We're less safe because we didn't do what we should have done. We fought a war we shouldn't have done, and used the resources that we. You know, we put into Iraq, we should have done it in other places where the enemy is.
I really hate to bring this up. We still don't know where Osama bin Laden is, right? I mean, that's the bottom line.
We don't know where he is.
Isn't that a great headline, though? Obama gets Osama. Don't you think that's going to be an awesome headline? I mean, for you. Come on, Mary. But again, we are fighting an enemy that is not backing off. They are just regrouping. And this is a historic.
So we can go all over.
But you see, Iraq wasn't attacking us.
We just have to defend ourselves at one point, though.
Defending ourselves. Yes.
Right. Well,
being aggressive. So now we're aggressive in Iraq. And the problem here is that the strategy was so flawed that we're not able to say when we have victory. That's the problem I'm having with it.
I totally.
Well, I don't. You've got to define what it is, and I defined it in my terms is that you've got, as you see, some of the pieces.
Right. I agree with some of the pieces.
The question is, can you have a peaceful life? And by the way, I would say, and there would be people listening within the sound of my voice, and people who read your column, they would say, you know what? The people in Baghdad, in certain neighborhoods of Baghdad, are more safe than I am living on the south side of Chicago.
And right, and
because
you don't,
to them,
and you're not
they
gonna
are victims
that
of
area.
Domestic terrorism.
Yes, that's absolutely true. So that gets back to your point of safety. That victory would mean that people can walk down the streets of Baghdad and be safe. Well, you can't walk down the streets in some American cities and be safe. So how can we justify leaving our troops there based on that that goal? That's not a goal. That's not an achievable goal. And that is not on us to achieve. That's on the people themselves in Iraq to achieve.
And they are working themselves out of that position as far as teaching them to police themselves. And it ends up being a police action at that point where we need to work ourselves out of a job. And that's victory.
We have to pause. 1-800-723-8289. We're going to hear from David in Kern County listening to us in Bakersfield when we come back from Chicago.
Hey, Tanya Roberts here, and I want to know, where are you going on your next romantic getaway? Well, how about 3 days and 2 nights in Las Vegas? And what about you don't pay a dime for it? That's right. Act like a high roller in Vegas and pay nothing for it. It's all part of our celebration of Vegas's newest five-star resort, Tahiti Village. We want you to get out of Dodge. Stir up a little romantic magic in the most exciting city on earth with a complimentary second honeymoon, all on Tahiti Village. Come on, you know you deserve it. You know you want it. Las Vegas is calling. So stop what you're doing and call this special toll-free number, 877-38-GO-WIN. Oh, and as a bonus, if you call right now, they're going to throw in tickets to a hot show right on the strip. Can we say high roller treatment, baby? So call 877-38-GO-WIN for all the exciting details. That's 877-38-GO-WIN. Call now.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let's head to Champaign, Illinois, where Bill is listening to us. Bill, you're on the air. Line four, are you there?
Hi, Bruce, but I'm not Champaign. This is David in San Francisco.
Okay, David, well, go ahead. We'll take your call anyway.
Yeah, greetings. You know, I Stockton, the KMJ. I'm picking you up out of there. Central Valley. Hey, you know, a lot of people aren't really paying attention to the financing of the bailout in Detroit. There are three different companies there that really are problematic. There's the Carlyle Group, there's Cerberus, and then David Stockman. A lot of people have forgotten David Stockman, but that was Ronald Reagan's brain, just like Karl Rove was
economic Bush's brain.
Yeah, just like Karl Rove was Bush's brain, David Stockman was Ronald Reagan's brain. David Stockman is under indictment, and I think his trial is still pending based upon what he did to corner the market in Detroit. He essentially created a monopoly of all of the – there were dozens of different companies that made the interiors of all of the big three automakers in Detroit. He cornered the market on all of them, and then he started to loot the company. And he was indicted essentially for racketeering, and as I understand it, that trial is still pending. And so, you know, if you look at David Stockman's aspect of management in Detroit, then you look at Cerberus. Cerberus is Dan Quayle. Cerberus is John Snow. John Snow, the former Treasury Secretary under Bush that had to resign just 2 years ago, is now the CEO of Cerberus.
So, David, your point is that there's prosecutions that should go forward when you look into the mismanagement of some of these companies.
Absolutely, and then you look at Citicorp, Norway, and Japan have banned Citicorp from doing business in their countries because of organized crime money laundering. Citicorp. This is one of the major banks in America, the Rockefeller Bank, you know, and for them to lose their business licenses in Japan and Norway because of organized crime dealing.
All right, so your point is we should be looking at those, and I'm sure that as Washington and with the new Attorney General, I'm sure they'll be aggressively looking for culprits wherever they can find them. Let's go to that long-overweighted bill in Champaign we told you about. Bill, are you there?
Yeah, I'm there now.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. Hey, I want to make a little comment, you know, about how military people stay in all these different countries that you were talking about a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
I'm an honorably discharged Marine from the Vietnam era. And I've got a problem with thinking that every time there's some kind of a incident that happens with our allies or countries that are friendly with us, that are we going to start sending troops everywhere so that we can have this blanket of security that says we're totally 100% safe? I mean, we don't even have a draft anymore, you know, to where you can get, it's all volunteer. We don't have enough military to go around.
Well,
so.
I wouldn't say I don't think we should send it everywhere.
Well, I mean, you
and
know,
I wonder, I guess my question would be this is, you know, we're talking about whether or not, you know, troops should be left in Iraq, or David has argued and many anti-war Democrats who've been on this pro have argued that Iraq was a mistake. But then in the next breath, they will say, you know, the fight that should have been fought was in Afghanistan. So the question is, I assume, David, that if you think that the war should be waged in Afghanistan, you would not oppose if troops went to Afghanistan. If
more
troops were elsewhere, you move them into there and as you define it, win the battle against the terrorists there. Is that correct?
We want to eliminate al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, and we would like to eliminate them in Pakistan and anywhere they are.
All right, so my question is, if we took some troops from Germany and the DMZ and Japan, and you know we're going to have a military expert on the show in the next couple of weeks to answer this a little more in depth.
Right, but we don't have enough troops.
If we took some troops there, could we not put them in Afghanistan?
We do not have enough troops to fight in Afghanistan and Iraq at the same time with the level that we need in Afghanistan. We should be withdrawing from Iraq and moving into Afghanistan. And as you know, we talk about military presence. I think we also have to talk about economics and foreign policy and doing things to try to change the world so we do not generate terrorism, you know, these terrorists who want to kill us.
I think, by the way, and this is something I want to get everybody's reaction to, but it seems to me that in the next 4 to 8 years, the country that is going to be the in the spotlight for the United States as a problem spot is Pakistan. I think Pakistan is one of the most dangerous countries in the world for the United States in the future. Fran,
the
do you
large
agree with
population
that?
Of Muslim in that country, and the more that are of the al-Qaeda radical views, is going to affect their desire to take out the Western civilization, which is what they told us 9/11 was about. I don't know. I mean, we were minding our own business and was attacked. So it is of concern.
Well, they
argue
we were not minding our own business.
Well,
that we were on foreign soil for other purposes, and that's one of the reasons why they attacked us.
But it wasn't Muslims. It's al-Qaeda and, you know, Muslim faith are not one and the same at all.
Well, I hope we can look at this thing as one war at a time, as we do one president at a time, and focusing on, you know, trying to get out of Iraq and trying to figure out what to do about Afghanistan. That's a lot on the table as it is.
Mary Mitchell of the Chicago Sun-Times, thank you very much for being with us tonight. Fran Eaton has been our conservative Republican. David Sirt has been our liberal Democrat. Thank you all for joining us on our broadcast this evening. Beyond the Beltway is a Genevieve production produced in association with WLS Talk Radio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, and Larry Kahn. Tom Veracruz and Ben Stewart, the ever-popular Ben Stewart, helped make this program possible. Until next week, at this same time, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.